This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
This is a podcast edition of Technogaze on Joy 94.9. In Melbourne, you can tune in on Monday night, 7 p.m. on 94.9 FM or online at joy.org.au/listen live. For more information, visit joy.org.au.
Plug it in, turn it on, with Technogaze on Joy 94.9.
Sponsored by Right Click IT. The right information and right solutions for your business.
RightClickIT.com.au.
Joy 94.9. Radio chic.
Buy it, use it, break it, fix it, trash it, change it, mail, upgrade it, charge it, point it, zoom it, press it, snap it, work it, quick erase it, write it, cut it, paste it, save it, load it, check it, quick rewrite it, plug it, play it, burn it, rip it, drag it, drop it, zip and zip it, lock it, fill it, curl it, find it, view it, code it, jump and lock it, surf it, scroll it, pose it, click it, cross it, crack it, switch, update it, name it, read it, tune it, print it, scan it, send it, fax, rename it, touch it, bring it, pay it, watch it, turn it, leave it, stop for man.
Good evening, this is Technogaze on Joy 94.9, the show where we look into the past, observe the current, and gaze into the future of technology. My name is Mark Powney, and tonight a special mention to all who are listening overseas, either online at joy.org.au/listen live, or via our podcast, which you can subscribe to via our own webpage at joy.org.au/technogaze. We welcome all feedback, both via our email address, technogaze@joy.org.au, and via our Twitter account, Technogaze. Tonight, we're discussing the recent attempts by online activism group Anonymous to receive media coverage about the internet censorship regime the Australian government are trying to enact. Are they here to help or cause a hindrance to the cause? Also in the studio with me tonight is Nick Bassett. Welcome, Nick.
Good evening.
Of course, this show is beamed into the airwaves by the grace of Australia's first gay and lesbian radio station, Joy 94.9. And Nick joins us to not only participate in the discussion, but also to give us a bit of background of his work here at Joy in putting together and maintaining the IT infrastructure here. He will give us an overview of what it is that keeps the station running from an IT perspective. Often the work you do is behind the scenes, isn't it, Nick?
That's correct. Very rarely do I get on air, and that's just the way I like it.
Well, I've collared you tonight, and yes. Here you are. So, welcome. Of course, a typical Technogaze show, we'll start off with some news.
Okay.
You've got to wait for the
ding. No one told me about the ding.
The ding.
Okay. The first bit of news I have is regarding the Telstra split, so...
Telstra split. That's right.
Communications Minister Stephen Conroy last week announced that the government will force Telstra to structurally separate and overhaul the access regime, which would be the biggest overhaul that the communications giant's been through since the Hawke government reforms in the late 80s.
Right.
So Telstra basically has been told they can do this of their own volition, mm-hmm. or it will be forced upon them.
What exactly is the split?
So basically what's happening is a strong functional separation framework is the way it's been discussed.
Yes.
And it's between the wholesale arm of Telstra,
yes.
and the retail and I suppose consumer end of Telstra. So
right.
it will hopefully open up a lot more
Competition,
exactly. Mm. So the ACCC have been given much stronger roles in managing disputes, imposing access terms, and also the principles behind these access, in some cases limiting the spectrum that Telstra can buy up as well.
That's right. They're using that as a bit of a stick, aren't they? They're saying, well, if you don't make these changes... then we will limit the amount of bandwidth that will be made available to you in the wireless spectrum release that's going to occur very shortly.
Yeah, and I mean, anyone who's been watching the news in the last 10 years would know the ACCC and Telstra have certainly been at odds, loggerheads, yes, for quite some time with various outcomes. And also Stephen Conroy himself has beefed up the services obligation, which means he can raise the penalties that are imposed upon telcos. Mm. And also the ACMA are able to prevent Telstra taking up payphones, which I know a lot of people feel very passionate about.
Yes, I guess if you want to make sure you can always make that emergency phone call.
Yes, that's right. 1 in 9 payphones is working. The trouble is there's not 9 left in most neighbourhoods anymore.
That's a good point, actually.
I remember they used to be in every street corner when I was growing up. There was one directly across the road, one around the corner. You cannot find a payphone anymore.
And the window was always smashed.
Yeah. Or the cord had been yanked out of the handset or something. No. Basically, this legislation is being considered by the Senate committee and debated before the end of the year, which basically is a case of Telstra have 9 to 10 weeks to get the house in order before the government will, if they haven't, will step in and arbitrarily make these changes.
Now, I've heard on the inside, I've got a good friend who actually works in Telstra. I won't say his name, but he says that apparently the operational side of things is pretty much split down the middle anyway. The wholesale versus retail of Telstra is quite separate anyway. So in terms of people and how they sit in the organisation, not much is going to change. But I think the thing that this is trying to achieve is, in fact, get the competition there. So it'll be more about the money that flows around the place as opposed to the operational side of things.
I mean, look, Telstra, anyone who's followed the PMG through Telecom Australia, through Telstra inherited this wonderful, you know, 80 years worth of infrastructure.
Yes.
And every other, you know, company that's come along and tried to challenge that has had to build or lease Telstra infrastructure to get their own company up and running. So it's been always this lost battle. Before they've started, most of these companies, we know telcos come and go, and obviously outgoings to the major stakeholder and the infrastructure is one of the big problems there.
Indeed. So there we go.
Telstra.
Split between the middle and down the middle, I should say. Now, a bit of some... overseas news or more international stuff. Google, the benevolent leader of internet search. I just realised I said that with a Microsoft representative in the studio. Google, benevolent leader of internet search and the only software company capable of taking the fight to Microsoft, has this week announced their web browser named Chrome will be available for general release on Macs this year. So far, the search giant's foray into the web browser market with the Google Chrome web browser has been restricted to Windows-only development. Mm-hmm. Those of us with Macs, or indeed Linux, have not had the choice to run Google Chrome as our browsers. However, last week, Google announced that they will be releasing a version of Chrome for Macs and Linux by the end of the year. With the imminent release of Chrome version 4 for Windows and the early beta versions of Chrome for Macs touting a version 4 build number, it would seem they're nearing the release date, pending some final bug fixes and minor feature enhancements. One of the key features I've noticed about Chrome over other browsers, and I'm a web developer, so feel free to ridicule me for my attention to this detail here, but the browser tabs in Chrome are positioned in a much more logical place than where they are placed on, say, Internet Explorer and indeed Firefox.
Yes, IE has very little respect for. I hate it. Every successive update seems to just bring more problems and then more patches to fix the problems. Firefox I'm quite happy with. I use Firefox.
But do you think, I mean, the whole user interface thing, I mean, what happened in the evolution of web browsers just recently, what with Firefox brought about tabs?
Yep.
Was probably the biggest thing it produced, and now Internet Explorer has tabs. But the problem I've always seen with that new functionality is the fact that they're positioning correctly. You know, you put an address above the tab in order for that particular tab to change address. Yeah. And it's the address above it that actually doesn't work. User interface gurus would be like, just cringe at that.
IE, Firefox, Safari all have that tabbed browsing. And it's interesting if you look at some of the beta releases I've seen on some, the tabs have actually gone from above the address bar to below the address bar to below the bookmarks bar, just depending on which version,
which beta, which one are they testing,
obviously which designer got the final say in that development meeting.
Interesting, yeah. So there's another function that Google Chrome is going to introduce, and that's called the Omnibar. And that's basically, it has tabbed searching, which is an interesting phenomenon where you can start entering the site name in your URL, your web address bar, and then you can press tab, and it suddenly changes the mode of the address bar to be in search mode. So you can say, I want to search this website now. So I've started typing in, say, theage.com.au, press the tab button, and start typing in a search term, and it automatically goes into search mode. So it goes off to Google and gives you some results that way. So it's some really sort of, I guess, what's the right word, efficiency tools in there. You've got some very quick shortcuts that are
Google
available.
For some time, there's been the functionality within a website that you can Google search explicitly a website, but this is the actual whole browser.
Mm.
Irrespective of whether the web developer for that site has built in that functionality,
yes,
this is now browser-wide.
Mm. Another interesting feature is the way the web browser, as in Chrome, pops up, deals with pop-up windows. They are actually confined to the tab from which they came until you explicitly drag them out. So it'll sort of display that down the bottom of the tab, and then from that point onwards, you can choose to turn it into its own pop-up window. So it's putting the power back in the user's hands.
No more big busted women sort of thrusting themselves at you when you go to a Wares site, unfortunately, everybody. What a shame!
Which websites are you going to, Nick?
I always have this argument with one of the girls at work. She gets the penis enlargement emails and I get the breast enlargement emails. I said, obviously, we've got to change email addresses.
Oh, on that note, what's up next? Google versus Apple.
Oh, yes.
Goliath versus Goliath.
It is a little bit like that, actually. This is another one of those wonderful news stories from the US.
Yes.
We seem to be really slamming Google tonight, don't we? We love you. And this is, I thought a bit of history, a bit of background to start with, because this is not a new issue. It's been going on for a little while, Google versus Apple. So back in May, the FTC, the Federal Trade Commission, and the Federal Communications Commission, and the Department of Justice, you know, the whole world, decided that there was a bit of antitrust there amongst those two companies, because they shared two board members, the Google CEO, Eric Schmidt, and Arthur Levinson, who is the CEO of Genentech. Basically, there's a bit of law or an act in America called Clayton's Antitrust Act, and that means that individuals cannot sit across boards of competing companies if it's thought that cross-pollination would reduce competition between the two companies.
And I guess in an industry like IT, where, you know, there's such a, I guess, small pool of people who are really talented, you know, people like Eric Schmidt and so forth are well sought after amongst other companies.
Well, you had, for a while, Steve Jobs was on the Apple board and, I think still is, on the Pixar board as well. But because of the difference in what they do, it wasn't touching. Although Pixar is computer-generated animation, there was thought to be enough distance between them.
Yeah.
Then back in late July, Google announced that the calling and messaging service that they'd called Google Voice, they're very creative, those Google people, had been rejected from Apple's App Store, and 3 days later, Google, Apple, and AT&T, who are the iPhone's exclusive carrier in the US, all received inquiries from the FCC saying, you know, why did this happen? Then the response from Apple was, no, it hasn't been rejected, it's under review. August, Dr. Eric Schmidt, chief executive of Google, resigns from the Apple board, and the position taken from Apple was that it was because Google is now entering more of Apple's core businesses with Android, Chrome, etc.
And Chrome OS.
And Chrome OS, yeah. And the thought there was that, or what was happening was that Mr. Schmidt was having to recuse himself from more and more parts of board meetings because he couldn't actually have an active part in discussions on iPhones and, you know, Safari, things of that nature.
I guess when you're no longer an effective board member, there's no point being on the board.
That's the exact phrase. Eric's effectiveness as an Apple board member will be significantly diminished.
Wow, I didn't even see that.
That's amazing. So, yes, they obviously identified there would be potential conflicts of interest. Now, just last week, Apple and AT&T denied rejecting Google Voice from the iPhone App Store again. But following a Freedom of Information Act request, it would appear that Apple did reject the Google Voice and Google Latitude from the App Store because they deemed it duplicate functionality.
Yes. Now, it's often the case that Google try to get into markets with their, you know, their technology and their this particular one, the Google Voice application, is really sort of trying to bring together a lot of phone applications all into the one app.
It's this sort of almost unified
communications.
Exactly.
That's another buzzword.
The understanding is it's one number that you can send to your home phone, your work phone, your mobile. Your voicemails will come in as email, so you can listen to them, which replicates the iPhones have got the visual voicemail sort of interaction there.
So,
as recently as last Friday, so only a couple of days ago, Apple said, look, we don't agree with everything that Google is saying in this response. We haven't rejected it. We'll continue to discuss it and try and find a way forward. So, yeah, two of the bigger players that have certainly made a name for themselves in being away from the norm seem to be at quite at odds at the moment. So we shall watch with interest.
It's interesting what competition does, eh?
Yes. Competition within competition.
This is TechnoGaze on Joy 94.9. Coming up next, we'll discuss the recent internet activity around the Australian government's push for internet censorship and what you may or may not have heard regarding the group Anonymous and their attacks on the government websites. This is TechnoGaze on Joy 94.9.
Plug it in. Turn it on with TechnoGaze on Joy 94.9.
Sponsored by Right Click IT, the right information and right solutions for your business.
RightClickIT.com.au.
Now, there's a way of contacting us on in the studio here this evening, isn't there, Nick?
There certainly is. Yes. You can. I'll do the SMS number. You can SMS us on 0427 Joy 949.
And for those of us, I always like to do this. For those of us who aren't, don't have the typical keypads, so the BlackBerry users out there, for example,
the CrackBerry, yes,
yes. What's the number for them?
That is 0427 569 949.
And just to make sure you know, it's not a different number just for you, CrackBerry users.
It's just the same number, but without the letters. It's got the numerical. Interface.
Yes. So, we reported last week about the online activism group Anonymous having attempted some attacks on government websites in order to raise the level of attention towards the government's internet censorship policy. We pointed out that not much came as a result of the Anonymous performing the denial of service attacks, and it seems the group are quite disappointed by the lack of media exposure they're getting for their attempts.
Where?
Is that your single word response?
That was my single word response. With all, take it with the spirit with which it was intended.
Their goal was essentially an information campaign, which really only reached circles of internet geekdom, which doesn't really say much for their efforts. So I thought we'd have a look at some previous work of their group, and that call themselves Anonymous, which actually include a couple of unknown ones. I didn't realise they have some fame before they took on Scientology. Before they took on Scientology, they attempted a few raids, what are termed as raids, including one on this site called Habbo. And Habbo is essentially an online social networking and role-playing game. It lets you choose your own avatar, with options for your skin colour and hair and clothing and that sort of thing. And Anonymous performed an attack where they flooded the site with thousands of sign-up requests, all of them choosing their look to entail an afro hairstyle and black skin. They performed numerous activities within the game, for example, making swastika formations with their people, because you're like a little, you're sort of a little person, you're in this 3D world, and you're I'm not sure what it's
like,
kind of
Sims,
similar.
Yeah,
similar to the Sims, I guess. Okay. It's a good representation if you know what Sims is like. And so they're making formations with their people all making themselves look like a Schwarzenegger. They also include blocking access to the swimming pool because it, quote, gives you AIDS, unquote, which is a bit of an odd one, I thought.
I thought the worst that could happen at a public swimming pool was getting pregnant. But, you know, this is, gets worse every moment, doesn't it? This with Habbo, I keep thinking of that episode in The Simpsons where Gabbo is coming. Everyone's excited, but no one knows what it is. I've never heard of this. Well, I have to look it up now.
There's plenty of information on Wikipedia, as always, for Habbo. I actually tried it once upon a time. I didn't get it. I'm not much into those social networking / online game type
like
things.
Like World of Warcraft and all that kind of palaver.
World of Warcraft I'm actually avoiding because I think that... I've gotten a bit of an addictive personality, so I might
get stuck there forever, won't you?
Indeed. So a couple of other attacks that this group Anonymous have performed. Hal Turner, who is now in jail, but once produced a weekly webcast called The Hal Turner Show, he's actually a white supremacist. So he was sort of touting his white supremacy views upon everyone with this show. And Anonymous got on the cause and actually attacked his websites and started doing the denial of service type thing against Hal Turner's website. So at the time, Hal actually responded by redirecting his site off to another sort of hacker friendly website. So trying to imply that these people or Anonymous or whoever it was that were attacking the site were actually part of this 4chan. Hackers' website. So, interesting sort of tactic there. But that's one of the other things that Anonymous have performed. And Project Chronology. Now, this is a Scientology one. Started with a Tom Cruise video about Scientology appearing on YouTube. And, of course, the Scientology lawyers invoked the DMCA to have the video removed. And people identifying themselves as Anonymous organized Project Chronology, which was a series of denial-of-service attacks again against Scientology's websites, various websites. So they kind of take up the cause where I'm not quite sure what the Habbo one was all about, but definitely the other two. There's an amount of, reflection on general perceived beliefs out there on the internet.
We won't even go into the Scientology aspect of it, but they do certainly seem to pick some interesting targets there. There's a very diverse range of issues they're addressing.
Indeed. It's an interesting phenomenon, really. The idea that a common goal can be formed, but with no real central command and control, if you like. These people are performing coordinated activities to make a point that is shared in the general psyche, perhaps a point that may only represent a small subset of the population, though. So, I'm not quite sure. I think also Stephen Conroy's response, because, of course, they attempted, an Australian version of that, where a couple of people got together on an ISE channel somewhere. And
All three of them.
And identified themselves as being Anonymous.
Yep.
And got together and said, okay, let's jump on and sort of perform denial of service attacks against Australian government to try and promote awareness of the censorship rules that Senator Stephen Conroy, who sometimes is friend when it comes to Telstra and sometimes is foe when it comes to censorship, was trying to push forward. So he responded to this particular attack with simply saying it's quite childish. So he described it as really quite juvenile, which leads me to the question, do you think this attack by Anonymous is going to achieve anything for the greater good?
Yeah, it's sort of a bit of an interesting one. I mean, there's ways and means, I guess, and different factions will always think that there's another way of doing things. And I suppose, it's like people that put a bit of lead pipe on the train line to derail a train because they have a strong view about something. It's like, why pick a really wild, out there way of expressing yourself? Because people are all going to go, these people are fruitcakes.
And one person's terrorist is another person's freedom fighter, maybe the reverse.
Yeah, it's a bit like that, isn't
it? So do you think they're promoting the cause of those of us who are against the internet censorship proposal but are also law-abiding citizens? I mean, is that something that would you... I mean, I don't want you to out yourself on air as being an anonymous person.
An anonymizer. look, I think it's brought it into the public eye, but probably no more than I think the furor that was around the whole internet censorship debate from the start. Whirlpool or any other forum site had hundreds of thousands of posts and views on all these different things. This has made the news more so. I think it made the news more so because it was an attempt to bring down the Prime Minister's website.
Yes.
And then what was the flow on, or what was the precipitating factor? Oh, the reason is because of internet censorship. It wasn't internet censorship and to that end we're bringing down the Prime Minister's website.
Yep. It's more the other way around.
It was more the other way around. And I think that is actually really – it actually hurts the cause, in my view, I think, because people then go – what is it these people don't want censored? So then they start going, well, what sort of things are we censoring that these people really want to see?
Yes.
And, you know, it almost becomes the other side of the coin that I think it's a negative. I see it as a negative.
Fair enough.
Mind you, there are some things I absolutely think should be banned online. I think there are some things that there is no place for in a human society. I mean, you know, child pornography, for example, something like that. But then when you hear that things like any sites that were dealing with anorexia or bulimia, or there's a half a dozen things, or even gay and lesbian websites were being blocked.
It's a collateral damage, isn't it? That we've got to be wary of, particularly, I mean, Joy is a gay and lesbian radio station. Exactly. In our area, if we have our freedoms impinged on,
exactly,
to use a sort of American terminology, then that's something we should fight up against.
And it's the one thing I think too is whose version of morality do we use?
Stephen Fielding's brand.
That's yes. Get Family First in there. There'll be about three websites left on the internet, I think, after they've gone through it.
I'm not going to ask which ones because I could send them.
Every news site would straight away be out violence, sex, drugs, straight away. Get rid of every news service there is. Sorry.
That's true. This is Technogaze on Joy 94.9. Coming up next, we have Nick here in the studio. You've just heard him.
That's me.
And I thought I'd make the most of this opportunity to pick his brains. What makes Joy as
It'll
a community
a
radio...
Interview.
Sorry?
It'll be a short interview.
I'll keep picking until I reach something I shouldn't. What makes Joy as a community radio station tick? What makes it makes up the IT systems here at Joy, both in the back office function and some of the aspects of the on-air infrastructure? So we'll be sort of probing Nick's head for that information. You're listening to Technogaze on Joy 94.9. And tonight, I have in the studio with me Nick Bassett, who, among other things, works as an IT nerd here at Joy 94.9. So I look around the office here at Joy, and I see a nice diversity of computer infrastructure. What makes up the systems we use here day in, day out?
What makes up the systems? Well, look, we have a predominantly Microsoft server end.
Yes.
And a cross-platform desktop environment.
Right.
We have PCs mostly the desktop form PCs. We've got a few Mac PCs, or Mac desktops, and a few Mac laptops that make up our infrastructure.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's at least one Linux box in there somewhere.
Just one. It got resurrected, I think.
It did. It very recently went through a resurrection.
It's someone out there must be trying to keep things diverse.
Trying to tell us something, aren't they?
So it's predominantly Windows Server environment, though. Are there any issues in getting the Macs on the Windows environment? I mean, is that, of course,
there's always issues when you try and make our two best friends talk to each other, but it's fairly painless. Fairly painless. There's not a major. I mean, look, authenticating a Mac on a Microsoft server domain is fairly simple. Drivers for printers, things like that, can be a bit of an issue.
As I discovered tonight.
As you discovered tonight.
I thought, I really want to use my Mac to prepare for this show.
This is going to happen. It took a couple of attempts, but we got the right configuration in the end.
Indeed.
And file sharing, the SMB... AFS
is the Apple protocol, which I don't think we're using that much here.
We're mostly SMB, which thankfully the Macs are quite adaptive and don't mind talking SMB as well.
Yes, I guess with thanks to the community projects such as Samba, there's a lot of code there that they can utilise and allow it to connect to a Windows network.
Yeah, and we keep everything fairly patched, so we're on the latest... service packs for everything, which is also, like, obviously new releases of software make things work a little bit better together.
Mm-hmm. So Joy 94.9 is a community radio station.
Yes.
Do we get any special licensing options for software, particularly for software? Because, I mean, it's, you know, it's a pretty big drain on the budgets that we sort of run on here.
Yeah, look, software, obviously, because we like to be 100% compliant with all licensing requirements.
Thank you.
As a message through the BSA. That's right, yeah. And look, quite obviously, there are a lot of corporations that struggle to remain license compliant. So we're quite lucky being a not-for-profit. And we also have the income tax exemption or the not-for-profit status there. DonorTech is an organisation, donortech.com.au.
Right.
DonorTech have agreements with Microsoft, Symantec, and a number of other software providers. And, for example, they charge what's known as an admin fee. These suppliers of products give this software to DonorTech.
Right. So licenses all
licenses, sort of etc. And most of that is administrated through the eOpen, so it's a volume license agreement.
Right.
And for example, you can get a Windows XP Pro license for about $11.
Mm-hmm.
And that is paid to DonorTech, and that allows them to administrate the program. So they'll set up an eOpen account, they'll register all the licensing, they'll send you an email with all the bits and pieces. So I think they always have some overhead, and that fee is just to cover their overheads, which for $11 for a desktop license is pretty good.
Yeah.
Small Business Server 08, which is the latest release, including 5 CALs, $78.
Right.
$78.
How much would that normally go for?
I don't have the figure right off the top of my head, but you'd be looking at probably a couple of $100, I would think, if not, near $1,000, I would say.
Oh, really?
Even there.
Because that comes with a lot of sort of built-in things.
Built-in functionality.
A small business server is a sort of, it's for a small business.
Yeah, SBS, which is out of the box, so it'll run your website, it'll do the exchange, the email side of things. So it's fully featured. Under $100. They do hardware as well.
Oh, right.
Which is really handy. Cisco. 877 Cisco are probably one of the better known security and networking appliance vendors.
So there's Cisco being for networking, so this is all the blue cables, the network cables that plug into your computer.
Yeah, pretty much.
Cisco sits in the middle.
That's
right. And provides you with connectivity to
and everything between your network and the internet, the outside world. So whether that's just a basic modem router, whether it's firewall infrastructure, things of that nature, VPN tunnels, things of that, to link multiple offices.
Mm-hmm.
A Cisco 877W, which is the wireless component,
yes,
normally would go for somewhere in the vicinity of $700 to $800. Through DonorTech, it's $85.
Wow. And that's for a tangible, that's a piece of hardware that you get.
It's a physical bit of hardware that they ship to you and you can configure.
Yeah.
And the price difference is dramatic. Companies that have, you know, a couple of $100,000 IT budget, they wouldn't probably sneeze at $700 for a router. For a not-for-profit who may still have the same security requirements as a company, who they need to restrict people who can remote in and how, some of those quality of service type setups.
Yes.
If you're doing web streaming, for example, you want to allocate a certain amount of bandwidth just for the web stream.
Which is something, of course, that Joy does.
It is. Yeah. If you want to allocate that sort of quality of service, you would need a high-end router. So under $100.
Yeah, right.
It's really quite good. It's donortech.com.au.
Now, you mentioned, DonorTech provide hardware, but they don't provide all the types of hardware that we need here. I mean, there's server infrastructure as well that we use here.
That's correct.
We mentioned that we use Small Business Server to serve all the stuff as a software side, but on the hardware side, where do we get that from?
Yeah, the hardware side of stuff. Look, we're not ashamed to hunt eBay for a good bargain, which have done in the past for desktops. Often you can find a nice 12-month-old series of PCs that may have been rolled out from a corporate environment. You can pick them up for under $150 each, sort of thing, or whatever.
Oh, nice.
Server end, we've been very, very lucky that IBM came to the party, as it were, about four or five years ago and donated a server. At the time, it was going to be an ex-display or ex-sort of showroom device.
Demo device,
yep. Yeah. And as would have it at the time, we got a brand new off the production line Dual Xeon 3 gig, 4 gig of RAM,
wow,
couple of 100 gig hard drives, brand new. And
Back at that moment in time, it was a pretty decent machine.
That was a pretty decent machine. I mean, I think maybe quad core processors were around, or quad processor machines around, but
not dual
processor was still pretty good after our old Pentium 3 800 meg machine we'd been running on, the white box we'd been running on for a while.
Fair enough. So now we do web streaming here, yes, at Joy. We also do a lot of online collaboration type stuff, like the Web 2.0 things, you know, Twitter and Facebook. A couple of the shows here do Facebook. Yep. We have internet connectivity to facilitate all those things.
We do. The lovely people at Internode.
God, this sounds like a sponsorship.
It does sound like a bit of a commercial.
I'll just throw over to Moira.
Yeah, and I'm doing the...
the hand signals. We're on radio.
No, that doesn't work. I'm trying to do an Adriana Xenadez... type motion. No, it didn't work. Internode very kindly give us two 60 gig ADSL to their, I think they're called Business Extreme packages, which
right.
it's 24 meg down, 2 meg up, mm-hmm, you know, subject to your availability and all that sort of stuff. But that's the high-end, high-usage package they have.
Yep.
We've got two of those, which... sounds like a lot, but as you say, in a digital world which we're in, with podcasting, Facebooking, Twittering, and even just day-to-day email and surfing of the web, we go through at least one of those 60 gig connections a month and certainly break into the other one.
Right.
So, yeah, we do definitely have embraced the Web 2.0.
And, of course, they also graciously provide us with the web streaming,
yes,
component.
Yes,
as well,
the web streaming. Thankfully, uploads are not counted towards your billing amount.
You wouldn't think that they should be, because, I mean, the streaming does... it comes straight from the studio here and through our internet connection to Internode system. And
so it's
pretty much going straight out of our office here into Internode, and it's just part of Internode's little cloud. It's not going out to the internet. So it's not really costing them anything to provide that until it gets to the outside of internet, if Internode, I should say, if people are streaming from another ISP, for example.
Yeah. Well, Internode customers, if you happen to be an Internode customer and you do stream Joy 94.9 online, it doesn't count towards your download limit either, which is really nice. So, we send the feed out once to Internode. We actually send it twice. We send it one in a broadband 128K link, and we send it in a dial-up sort of lower format, I think 64K or something, or maybe even less.
Something even lower, yes.
Look that up. but, yeah, it's there's the two streams. Internode then push it out to a couple of hundred people, which, you know, thankfully it's their capacity that's managing all that, because I think the load on our systems of, you know, very hundreds of people all wanting to log in, because I know a lot of people listen at work.
Yes.
It's something you can just have running on your computer and put your little iPhone headphones, plug it into the front of your computer there, and no one knows what you're doing. and people overseas, we have a lot of listeners that listen from around the world, and the web streaming, you know, it's like we're in their lounge room or their bedroom or wherever. We have really been blessed with some wonderful sponsors there.
Now, we've talked a bit about, I guess, transmission on the internet, but what about the transmitter that we use to do the terrestrial stuff, so the two-air stuff?
Yeah. Sure. The terrestrial broadcast, the actual transmitter is located on the top of Melbourne Central,
right,
here in the heart of Melbourne City.
Yes.
Joy has a sub-metro licence, which basically means we can't exceed the bounds of what they deem as the Melbourne City area, although we do slightly... overlap the fringes there. We push out at around 250 watts in an omnidirectional, pretty much omnidirectional direction.
Mm-hmm.
Omnidirectional direction.
Yes.
Doesn't sound right, but it is. The way that we actually do it, I did mention that our good friends over at Telstra have decided to cut off what are known as the analog tie lines, which a lot of broadcasters were using.
So tell us about what are analog tie wires?
Yeah, basically they're an unconditioned pair, which means that they don't go through any of the Telstra switching.
Right. So in layman's terms, I mean, I know that I've got copper wire into my yeah. home. Is it the copper wire? Is that what we're talking about?
Yeah, it's exactly that. It's copper wiring that doesn't run through any exchange. Everyone's probably aware of those little pillars that you see in the street that are full of Telstra connections, and the line basically comes out of a radio station mm-hmm. into one of those, and then there's a direct connection back through to wherever your transmitter is. It doesn't go through the exchange or through any other switching. So right. it's an unbroken connection, for want of a better
word. So they're actually turning that service off? They're not allowing. I wonder why that is, because it's not as if they're turning off copper infrastructure. They're not going to pull out all those copper wires, or at least not for the next 10 years, perhaps.
Yeah, I mean, there'd probably be a lot of jumpers around that they a lot of copper there they could recycle, but I find it hard to believe that they'd actually go through and undo all that infrastructure until it's required for something else. And really, they only gave people, since the start of the year, January 2009, they announced that they were going to shut it down, and then they've been doing progressive shutdowns on it.
Right.
So we now use a software-based solution, which is Audio TX.
Right.
There's a computer at each end, the studio end and the broadcast end, and it runs over an ISDN line.
Oh, okay. So it's just a pretty straightforward, like, one computer at one end, one computer at the other one.
One encoding.
These computers aren't much different to...
No, one encodes, sends the data down the line, the other end unencodes and pushes it out as an audio signal.
Right. And ISDN, I've heard before that ISDN is quite expensive. I mean, for what it provides compared to, say, the ADSL or BDSL type infrastructure, is that something that is a problem here?
Or? Well, look, it can cost up to $1,000 a month is the infrastructure cost on that. There's right. the two lines, the two physical ADSL lines, one at each end, and then the data, they actually measure you on the data. We are on a capped plan, as it were, that once we reach a certain cutoff point, we don't have to pay the excess over that, but that still comes up on about $1,000 a month. So,
wow, that's
a lot.
Quite expensive. Not something I'd want to be spending at home.
Not something you want on your home bill, no. But we are looking at moving towards a microwave link, which we have the equipment for. We just need to install this infrastructure, which there is obviously a price tag attached to that, which is...
Because if I do look out the studio here, I can actually see Melbourne Central,
straight across there.
Oh, you're pointing that way. Yes, that way.
Sorry, but line of sight means we can engage in a microwave link, which once we have the infrastructure, it's the only ongoing is really electricity, which is fairly minimal.
Interesting. I hope you've enjoyed this at home. If you're listening, this is what makes up Joy as a radio station in the technical sense. This has been TechnoGaze on Joy 94.9. Coming up next will be the Sports Lounge, so do stay tuned for that. There'll be lots of interesting talk about the latest going on in sport. This has been TechnoGaze. My name is Mark Powney, and with me in the studio tonight was Nick Bassett. Thank you, Nick, for being here.
Thank you.
And we'll see you later.
Thank you. Bye.
I program my home computer, beam myself into the future.
Plug it in, turn it on. With TechnoGaze on Joy 94.9.
Sponsored by RightClick IT, the right information and right solutions for your business.
RightClickIT.com.au.
This is a podcast edition of TechnoGaze on Joy 94.9. In Melbourne, you can tune in on Monday night, 7 p.m. on 94.9 FM or online at joy.org.au/listen live. For more information, visit joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.